This is Audible.
Sometimes you get up in the morning, and you know it's going to be one of those days. No toothpaste left in the tube, no toilet paper on the cardboard roll, hot water cuts out halfway through your shower, and someone's left a monkey on your doorstep. My name is Stephanie Plum, and I'm a bail bonds enforcement agent for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds. I live in a one-bedroom, one-bath, unremarkable apartment in a three-story brick box of a building on the outskirts of Trenton, New Jersey. Usually, I live alone with my hamster, Rex. But at 8:30 this morning, my roommate list was enlarged to include Carl the monkey. I opened my door to go to work, and there he was. Small brown monkey with long curled tail, creepy little monkey fingers and toes, crazy bright monkey eyes, and he was on a leash hooked to my doorknob. A note was attached to his collar. "Hi, remember me? I'm Carl, and I belong to Susan Stitch. Susan is on her honeymoon, and she knows you'll take good care of me until she returns. First, let me say that I've never wanted a monkey. Second, I barely know Susan Stitch. Third, what the heck am I supposed to do with the little bugger?" 20 minutes later, I parked my Jeep Wrangler in front of the bonds office on Hamilton Avenue. At one time, the Wrangler had been red, but it had seen many lives before it fell into my hands, and now it was far from primo, and the color was motley. Carl followed me out of the car and into the office, hugging my pants leg like a 2-year-old. Connie Rizzoli, the office manager, peered around her computer. Connie had a lot of big Jersey hair, a freshly waxed upper lip, and breasts no amount of money could buy. Lula stopped her filing and stood hands on hips. "That better not be what I think it is," Lula said, eyeballing Carl. "I hate monkeys. You know I hate monkeys." "It's Carl," I told her. "Remember when we busted Susan Stitch for failing to appear? And remember her monkey, Carl?"
"Yeah."
"Here he is."
"What are you doing with him?"
"He was attached to my doorknob with a note. Susan went on a honeymoon and left him with me."
"She got a lot of nerve," Lula said. "Where does he go to the bathroom? You ever think of that?"
I looked down at Carl. "Well?" Carl blinked and shrugged. He looked at Lula and Connie, curled his lips back, and gave them a gummy monkey smile.
"I don't like the way he's looking at me," Lula said. "It's creepy. What kind of monkey you got here, anyway?"
Lula is a former hoe, and she's only moderately altered her wardrobe to suit her new job. Lula somehow manages to perform the miracle of squeezing her plus-size body into petite-size clothes. Her hair was blonde this week. Her skin was brown as always, her spandex tube dress poison green. Her shoes were 4-inch spike-heeled faux leopard Via Spigas. It came as no surprise that the monkey was staring at Lula. Everyone stared at Lula. I didn't command that much attention in my jeans, girl-cut red t-shirt, gray sweatshirt, and an adequate swipe of lash-lengthening mascara. Not only did I feel like a bran muffin in a bakery case filled with eclairs, I was also the only one not packing a gun. My eyes are blue, my hair is brown, and my favorite word is cake. I was married for 10 minutes in another life, and I'm not inclined to repeat the mistake anytime soon. There are a couple men in my life who tempt me, just not with marriage. One of those tempting men is Joe Morelli. He's a Trenton cop with bedroom eyes and bedroom hands, and everything else you'd want to find in your bedroom is top of the line. He's been my off-again, on-again boyfriend for as long as I can remember, and last night, he was on again. The second guy in my life is Carlos Minoso, a.k.a. Ranger. Ranger's been my mentor, my employer, my guardian angel, and he's gotten as intimate with me as a man can get, but Ranger is never totally qualified as a boyfriend. Boyfriend might suggest an occasional date, and I can't see Ranger going there. Ranger is the sort of guy who slips uninvited into a girl's dreams and desires and refuses to leave.
"What's happening with Martin Munch?" Connie asked me. "Vinny's in a rant over him. Munch is a big-ticket bond. If you don't drag his ass into court by the end of the month, our bottom line won't be good."
This is the way things work in the bail bonds business. A guy gets accused of a crime, and before he's released back into society, the court demands a security deposit. If the accused doesn't happen to have $50,000 under his mattress to give to the court, he goes to a bail bonds agent, and that agent posts the bond for the accused for a fee. If the accused doesn't show up for his court date, the court gets to keep the bondsman's money until someone like me hauls the accused back to jail.
My ferret-faced cousin Vinny owns the bonds office on paper, but he's backed by his father-in-law, Harry the Hammer. If Vinny writes too many bad bonds and the office runs in the red, Harry isn't happy. And you don't want a guy with a name like Harry the Hammer to be unhappy. "I've been looking for Munch all week," I said to Connie. "It's like he's dropped off the earth." Martin Munch is a 24-year-old genius with a doctorate in quantum physics. For whatever reason, Munch went postal on his project manager, riding him like man of war, breaking his nose with a Dunkin' Donuts coffee mug, knocking him cold. Moments later, Munch was caught on a security tape as he left the research lab, cradling a one-of-a-kind monster cesium vapor magnetometer, whatever the heck that is. Munch was arrested and booked, but the magnetometer was never recovered. In a moment of insanity, Vinny wrote a bond for Munch. And now Munch is playing hard to get with his contraption. "This is a white-collar guy," Connie said. "He hasn't grown up in a crime culture. His friends and family are probably horrified. I can't see them hiding him." "He hasn't got a lot of friends and family," I told her. "From what I can determine, he has neighbors who have never spoken to him, and the only family is a grandmother in a retirement home in Cadmount. He was employed at the research facility for 2 years, but he never socialized. Before that, he was a student at Princeton, where he never got his face out of a book. His neighbors tell me a couple months ago a guy started visiting Munch. The guy was a little over 6 feet tall with an athletic build and expensive clothes. He drove a black Ferrari and had shoulder-length black hair and pale, almost white skin. Sometimes Munch would leave with him and not come back for several days. That's a whole enchilada."
"Sounds like Dracula," Lula said. "Was he wearing a cape? Did he have fangs?"
"No one said anything about a cape or fangs."
"Munch must have come in when I was out sick last week," Lula said. "I don't remember him."
"So what was it?" I asked her. "The flu?"
"I don't know what it was. My eyes were all swollen, and I was sneezing and wheezing, and I felt like I had a fever. I just stayed in my apartment drinking medicinal whiskey and taking cold pills, and now I feel fine. What's this Munch look like?"
I took his file from my Prada knockoff messenger bag and showed Lula his mugshot, plus a photo.
"Good thing he's a genius," Lula said, "on account of he don't have much else going on."
At 5'2" tall, Munch looked more like 14 than 24. He was slim, with strawberry blonde hair and pale, freckled skin. The photo was taken outdoors, and Munch was squinting into the sun. He was wearing jeans and sneakers and a SpongeBob t-shirt, and it occurred to me that he probably shopped in the kids' department. I imagine you have to be pretty secure in your manhood to pull that one off.
"I'm feeling hot today," Lula said. "I bet I could find that Munch. I bet he's sitting home in his underoos playing with his whatchamacallit."
"I guess it wouldn't hurt for us to check out his house one more time," I said. "He's renting one of those little tiny row houses on Crocker Street down by the button factory."
"What are you going to do with the monkey?" Lula wanted to know.
I looked over at Connie.
"Forget it," Connie said. "I'm not babysitting a monkey, especially not that monkey." "Well, I don't let monkeys ride in my car," Lula said. "If that monkey's going with us, you're going to have to drive your car. And I'm sitting in the back so I can keep an eye on him. I don't want no monkey sneaking up behind me giving me monkey cooties."
"I've got 2 new skips, Connie said to me. "One of them, Gordo Bolo, ran over his ex-wife's brand new husband with a pickup truck, twice. And the other, Denny Goosey, robbed a convenience store and accidentally shot himself in the foot trying to make his getaway. Both idiots failed to show for their court appearance." Connie shoved the paperwork to the edge of the desk. I signed the contract and took the files that contained a photo, the arrest sheet, and the bond agreement for each man.
"Shouldn't be hard to tag Denny Goosey," Connie said. "He's got a big bandage on his foot, and he can't run."
"Yeah, but he's got a gun," I said to Connie.
"This is Jersey," Connie said. "Everyone's got a gun, except you."
We left the bonds office, and Lula stood looking at my car.
"I forgot you got this dumb Jeep," Lula said. "I can't get in the back of this thing. Only Romanian acrobats could get in the back of this. I guess a monkey's got a ride in the back, but I swear, he makes a move on me, and I'm gonna shoot him."
I slid behind the wheel. Lula wedged herself into the passenger side seat, and Carl hopped into the back. I adjusted my rearview mirror, locked onto Carl, and I swear it looked to me like Carl was making faces at Lula and giving her the finger.
"What?" Lula said to me. "You got a strange look on you."
"It's nothing," I said. I just thought Carl was... Never mind. I drove across town, parked in front of Munch's house on Crocker Street, and we all piled out of the Jeep.
This here's a boring-ass house, Lula said. It looks like every other house on the street. If I came home after having two cosmopolitans, I wouldn't know which house was mine. Look at them. They're all red brick. They all have the same stupid black door and black window trim. They don't even have no front yard, just a stoop. And they all got the same stupid stoop.
I glanced at Lula. Are you okay? That's a lot of hostility for a poor row house.
It's a monkey. Monkeys give me the willies, and I might have a headache from all that medicinal whiskey.
I rang Munch's doorbell and looked through shears that screened the front door. Beyond the shears, the house was dark and still.
I bet he's in there, Lula said. I bet he's hiding under the bed. I think we should go around to the back and look.
There were 15 row houses in all. All shared common walls, and Munch's was almost dead middle. We returned to the Jeep. I rolled down the street, turned left at the corner, and took the alley that cut the block. I parked, and we all got out and walked through Munch's postage stamp backyard. The rear of the house was similar to the front, a door and two windows. The door had a small swinging trap door at the bottom for a pet, and Carl instantly scurried inside. I was dumbstruck. 1 minute Carl was in the Jeep, and then in an instant he was inside the house.
Holy macaroni, Lula said. He's fast.
We looked in a window and saw Carl in the kitchen, bouncing off counters, jumping up and down on the small kitchen table. I pressed my nose to the glass.
I have to get him out.
Like hell you do, Lula said. This is your lucky day. I say finders keepers.
What if Munch never returns? Carl will starve to death.
I don't think so, Lula said. He just opened the refrigerator.
There has to be a way to get in. Maybe Munch hid a key.
Well, someone could accidentally break a window, Lula said, and then someone else could crawl in and beat the living crap out of the monkey.
No, we're not breaking or beating. I rapped on the window, and Carl gave me the finger. Lula sucked in some air.
That little fucker just flipped us the bird.
Hey, it was probably accidental. Lula glared in at Carl.
Accident this, she said to him, middle finger extended.
Carl turned and mooned Lula, although it wasn't much of a moon since he wasn't wearing clothes to begin with.
Oh, yeah? Lula said. You want to see a moon? I got a moon to show you.
No, I said to Lula. No more moons. Bad enough I just looked at a monkey butt. I don't want your butt burned into my retinas.
Huh, Lula said. A lot of people pay good money to see that butt.
Carl drank some milk out of the carton and put the carton back into the refrigerator. He opened the crisper drawer and pawed around in it, but didn't find anything he wanted. He closed the refrigerator, scratched his stomach, and looked around.
Let me in, I said to him. Open the door.
Yeah, right, Lula said, as if his little pea brain could understand you.
Carl gave Lula the finger again, and then Carl threw the deadbolt, opened the door, and stuck his tongue out at Lula.
If there's one thing I can't stand, Lula said, it's a show-off monkey.
I did a fast walkthrough of the house. Not much to see. Two small bedrooms, living room, single bath, small eat-in kitchen. These houses were built by the Button Factory after the war to entice cheap labor, and the Button Factory didn't waste money on frills. The houses had been sold many times over since then, and were now occupied by an odd assortment of senior citizens, newly marrieds, and crazies. Seemed to me Munch fit into the crazy category. There were no clothes in the closet, no toiletries in the bathroom, no computer anywhere. Munch had cleared out, leaving a carton of milk, some sprouted onions, and a half-empty box of Rice Krispies behind.
It's the strangest thing, Lula said. I got this sudden craving for coffee cake. Do you smell cinnamon? It's like it's mixed up with Christmas trees and oranges.
I'd noticed the scent, and I was afraid I recognized it. How about you? I asked Carl. Did you smell cinnamon? Carl did another shrug and scratched his butt.
Now all I can think of is cinnamon buns, Lula said. I got buns on the brain. We gotta go find some. Or maybe a donut. I wouldn't mind a dozen donuts. I need a bakery. I got cravings.
Everyone vacated the kitchen. I closed the back door, and we all piled into the Jeep. I found my way to Hamilton and stopped at Tasty Pastry. What kind of donut do you want? I asked Lula.
Any kind. I want a Boston cream, a strawberry jelly, a chocolate glazed, one of them with a white icing and pretty colorful sprinkles, and a blueberry. No, wait. I don't want the blueberry. I want a vanilla cream and a cinnamon stick.
That's a lot of donuts.
I'm a big girl, Lula said. I got big appetites. I feel like I could eat a million donuts.
How about you? I asked Carl. Do you need a donut? Carl vigorously shook his head yes and jumped up and down in his seat and made excited monkey noises.
It's creepy that this monkey knows what we're saying, Lula said. It's just not right. It's like he's a alien monkey or something.
Sometimes Morelli's dog Bob knows what I'm saying. He knows walk and come and meatball.
Yeah, Tank knows some words too, but not as many as this monkey, Lula said. Of course, that's because Tank's a big, strong, silent type.
Tank is Lula's fiancé, and his name says it all. He's Ranger's right-hand man, second in command at Ranger Security Firm Rangeman, and he's the guy Ranger trusts to guard his back. To say that Tank is the big, strong, silent type is a gross understatement on all accounts. 15 minutes later, we were in the Jeep, and we'd eaten all the donuts.
I feel a lot better, Lula said. Now what?
I looked down at my shirt. It had powdered sugar and a big glob of jelly on it. I'm going home to change my shirt.
That don't sound real interesting, Lula said. You could drop me at the office. I might have to take a nap.
I parked my Jeep in the lot behind my apartment building, and Carl and I crossed the lot and pushed through the building's rear entrance. We took the elevator to the second floor, and Carl waited patiently while I opened my door. So, I said to him, do you miss Susan? He shrugged. You do a lot of shrugging, I told him. He studied me for a moment and gave me the finger. Okay, so it wasn't a shrug, and giving and getting the finger is a way of life in Jersey. Still, getting the finger from a monkey isn't normal even by Jersey standards. My apartment consists of a small entrance foyer with hooks on the wall for coats and hats and handbags. The kitchen and living room open off the foyer. A dining room is tucked into an extension of the living room, and at the other end is a short hallway leading to my bedroom and bathroom. My decor is mostly whatever was discarded by relatives. This is okay by me because Aunt Betty's chair, Grandma Mazur's dining room set, and my cousin Tootie's coffee table are comfortable. They come to me infused with family history, and they give off a kind of gentle energy that my life is sometimes lacking. Not to mention, I can't afford anything else. I hung my tote on one of the hooks in the foyer and stared down at a pair of scruffy men's boots that had been kicked off and left in the middle of the floor. I was pretty sure I recognized the boots, plus the battered leather backpack that had been dumped on Tootie's coffee table. I walked into the living room and stared down at the backpack. I blew out a sigh and rolled my eyes. Why me, I thought. Isn't it enough that I have a monkey? Do I really need one more complication? Diesel, I yelled. I moved to the bedroom, and there he was, sprawled on my bed. Over 6 feet of gorgeous, hard-muscled, slightly tanned male. His eyes were brown and assessing. His hair was sandy blonde, thick and unruly. His eyebrows were fierce. Hard to tell his age. Young enough to be lots of trouble. Old enough to know what he was doing. He was wearing new gray sweat socks, tattered jeans, and a faded t-shirt that advertised a dive shop in the Caicos. He rolled onto his back and smiled up at me when I came into the room.
Hey, he said.
I pointed stiff-armed to the door. Out!
What? No kiss hello?
Get a grip! He patted the bed next to him. No way, I said.
Afraid?
Of course I was afraid. He made the big bad wolf look like chump change. How do you always manage to smell like Christmas? I asked Diesel.
I don't know. It's just one of those things.
The smile widened, showing perfect white teeth, and crinkle lines appeared around his eyes.
It's part of my appeal, he said.
You were in Martin Munch's house earlier today, weren't you?
Yeah. You came in the back door, and I went out the front. I would have hung around, but I was following someone.
And?
I lost him.
Hard to believe.
Are you sure you don't want to roll around on the bed with me?
Rain check, I told him.
Really?
No. Here's the thing with Diesel. I'd be crazy not to want to take him for a test drive, but I've already got two men in my life, and that's actually one too many. Truth is, I'm a good Catholic girl. The faith has always been elusive, but the guilt is intractable. I'm not comfortable having simultaneous intimate relationships, even if it's only for a glorious 10 minutes. And Diesel isn't a normal guy. At least that's his story. If Diesel is to be believed, there are people living among us with abilities beyond normal. They look just like anyone else, and most hold normal jobs and live relatively normal lives. They're called unmentionables, and some are more unmentionable than others. From what I've seen, Diesel is about as unmentionable as a guy could get. Diesel travels the world tracking unmentionables who've gone to the dark side, and then he pulls the power plug. I don't know how he accomplishes this. I'm not even sure I believe any of it. All I know is one minute he's here, and then he's gone. And when he leaves, the barometric pressure improves. Diesel stood and stretched. And when he stretched, there was a tantalizing flash of skin exposed between shirt and low-riding jeans. It was enough to make my eyes glaze over and my mouth go dry. I struggled to replace the image with thoughts of Morelli naked, but I was only partially successful.
"I'm hungry," Diesel said. "What time is it? Is it lunchtime?"
He looked at his watch.
"It's afternoon in Greenland." "Close enough."
He ambled out of the bedroom and into the kitchen where Carl was sitting on the counter staring into Rex's aquarium.
"What's with the monkey?"
Diesel asked, his head in the refrigerator. "I'm babysitting." Diesel gathered up some cold cuts and sliced cheese and turned to me.
"You don't strike me as especially maternal."
"I have my moments. Admittedly, not very many, but probably they're just waiting for the right time to pop out." Diesel found bread and made himself a sandwich.
"He got a name?"
"Carl." Diesel flipped Carl a slice of bread, and Carl caught it and ate it. "Are you a monkey man?" I asked Diesel.
"I can take him or leave him."
Carl shut Diesel the finger, and Diesel gave a bark of laughter. Diesel ate some sandwich and looked my way.
"You two must get along great. You taught him that, right?"
"What are you doing here?" I asked.
"Visiting."
"You never just visit." Diesel got a Bud Light from the fridge, chugged it, and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
"I'm looking for a guy who has been known to hang with your friend Munch."
"Does this guy drive a black Ferrari and have long black hair?"
"Yes. Have you seen him?"
I shook my head. "No. I've talked to Munch's neighbors, and apparently he was Munch's only visitor. Munch didn't have much of a social life."
"What kind of leads do you have?" Diesel asked.
"The usual. Nothing. And you?"
"I tracked my man to Munch's house, but missed him by minutes. I've been trying to tag him for over a year. He can sense my approach, and he moves on before I get too close."
"He's afraid of you."
"No. He's enjoying the game."
"His name?"
"Gerwolf Grimoire," Diesel said.
"Wow, that's a really bad name."
"This is a really bad, really powerful guy. Somehow he connected with Munch, and now they're palling around together with Munch's magnetometer."
"Why was what's-his-name in Munch's house?" I asked Diesel.
"Gerwolf Grimoire, but he goes by Wolf. I suppose he went back to get something, or maybe he was playing with me. The house was clean when I got there. I followed Wolf's breadcrumbs to Broad Street, and then they disappeared."
"Breadcrumbs?"
"Cosmic debris. Hard to explain."
"Do I leave cosmic debris?"
"Everyone leaves it. Some people leave more than others. Wolf and I leave a lot because we're dense. We both carry high energy."
"That's weird."
"Tell me about it," Diesel said. "You should walk in my shoes."
He crossed to the foyer, took my bag off its hook, and stuck his hand in. "Hey," I said, "what are you doing?"
"I want to read your case file on Munch."
"How do you know it's in there?"
"I know. Just like I know you're wearing a pink lace thong and you think I'm hot."
"How? What?" I said.
"Lucky guess," Diesel said, pulling the file out of my bag, scanning the pages.
"I do not think you're hot."
"That's a big fib," Diesel said.
"I can save you some time," I told him. "There isn't anything in Munch's file, only a grandmother."
"Then let's talk to the grandmother."
"I've already talked to her." Diesel shoved his feet into his boots and laced up.
"Let's talk to her again."
I changed my shirt and we headed out.
Your car or mine? I asked him when we got to the lot.
What are you driving?
The Jeep that used to be red.
I like it, Diesel said.
What are you driving?
The Hog.
I looked over at the black Harley. No room for Carl, and it would wreck my hair. Probably it's easier to follow cosmic dust when you're on a bike, I said. Diesel settled himself into the Jeep's passenger side seat and grinned at me.
You don't really think there's cosmic dust, do you?
I plugged the key into the ignition. Of course not. Cosmic dust would be ridiculous. Diesel hooked an arm around my neck, pulled me to him, and kissed me on the top of my head.
This is gonna be fun, he said.
To listen to the rest of this story, look for the audiobook wherever books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.